Strongest Drive podcast. We are excited. We are losing the plot a little bit. It's Friday afternoon. It's windy. You know how it goes. We've just come back from our diving experience. Lydia is teaching me how to free dive. My hands are a little bit burnt, but the rest of me is not. So that is good. You know, it's a good ratio.
I think burnt hands is probably the least of your worries with diving.
Shots fired. I was good today.
No, I didn't mean it like that. I kind of did. But like in the sense that like you can just put sunscreen on next time. I feel like that's not like the barrier.
Oh, but right now, I can't go back. I can't go back in time now. It's done. The damage is done. It's not good enough. I should have put scorcher on my hands, not just on my face. That's the lesson.
Yeah. Well, is your face burnt?
No, look at it.
No, it's beautiful. You know what? On the topic of scorcher and zinc, I've been wearing my zinc every single day on my face, like every day on my face. During the weekend / you know, when I'm around the town, I don't wear as much.
Around the town? What are you getting up to?
Not around the town. I mean, just, you know, down, around the places. I don't put as much sunscreen on, like, look, I'm not here putting sunscreen on my legs and my arms as much as my face. And I know I should get better, but it's just become a daily habit to put it on my face.
This is
my issue. I look like a ghost. Like my face is so white now compared to the rest of my body. Like scorcher works too well. Like so well
this
that my
not
face
an issue.
Is like a ghost.
Well, the issue is you need to get it on your body. But the good thing is it's working and you're not going to have skin cancer on your face. So
it is
get it
working.
All over. Slap it on.
Yeah, but now I'm in the market for some fake tan to change my face
color
so it matches my body.
That is not the solution. Lydia.
Look at me right now. I'm wearing a white t-shirt. Can you even see my face?
I was wondering what was going on. Were you just headless?
Anyway, moving on. On the topic of today's episode is all about runners and running injuries. And we interviewed one of my, I was going to say ex-colleagues, but actually not ex-colleagues. It is my current colleague, Harry Lord. And Harry is a running physio and actually has an Instagram handle, Harry the Physio. So it's nice and clear to understand what he does. But he is a passionate runner and passionate about treating runners. And if you've checked out his Instagram, you'll see that he shares a lot of informative video content, informative reels with a whole bunch of information around specific running injuries and specific rehab that you can do to progress and get out of those injuries. So he is really the guy to know about running.
He is the guy, and he's recently moved overseas to Germany. So we got to learn a little bit of German throughout the episode, which was fun. And we also talked about some general principles that you need to know as a runner in terms of reducing your injury risk, doing some strength training, getting in the gym, getting your calves strong. Why is strength important? Why is power important? How do we fit it all in around our running? How do we navigate through our zone 2 training? All of the things you need to know if you are getting into it or if you just need a bit of a refresher, a few reminders, a few key principles to go about your training.
Yes, exactly. We spoke about all those things, and we also spoke about one of my favorite topics, which is the importance of calves and calf strength. And if you know me, you'll know that I love a good chat about calves because they are the most important runner's muscle. And I just think every runner is missing out. If you're not doing calf raises, guys, get on the calf raises now. And if you were struggling for calf raising motivation, then this episode is going to convince you because Harry tells you how damn good calf raises are.
Absolutely. Straight leg, bent leg, you name it. Just do it. Cool. Enjoy the episode, team. And if you happen to be in Germany, you can work with Harry in person. Or if you happen to be anywhere around the world, you can also reach Harry online. He is working for The Running Room virtually over Zoom and provides a lot of great value for any running-related injury. So we'll have a link below if you'd like to book in with Harry himself. And yeah, check out our other discount links. Treat yourself to some Tailwind or some Scorcher to save yourself from burning like my hands did today. And yeah, enjoy. Merry Christmas Eve.
Enjoy the episode, guys. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you just before the new year.
We will, and that will be a very special episode recapping the year, going through the highlights of all our guest episodes from this year. So stay tuned. All right, welcome back to the Strongest Ride podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Today, we have an international guest. I reckon we can say that now. You might be Australian. You might have only just moved overseas, but we're claiming an international guest. Harry Lord, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Very much far from international just yet. I'm still got the thick Aussie twang when I try to speak any type of German over here. But
yeah, can you give us any little German, like say I'm a physio or like something, or just make it up because we won't know.
Ich bin Physiotherapie.
Nice.
That was good.
Nice. What else have I got? I've got woher komme aus Australia? Ich bin 28 years alt.
Wow. That was a lot. What did that mean?
I'm from Australia. I'm 28.
Yeah, it's got all the basics covered. So anyone you meet in the street. Right?
I'm trying to order a coffee and that's what I say in German to them. They're like, okay.
Oh my goodness, that's good. I'm actually quite impressed. That's really good. We'll have to check back in a few months and check in on the progress. But if you want to let the listeners know a little bit about yourself, how you got into physiotherapy, what you've been doing for work over the last few years, and what you're doing over in Germany.
Yep. So first of all, you can probably tell I'm really bad at German. That's to start off with. I'm from Australia, obviously, that you could probably tell. I'm from a country town, Tamworth in New South Wales. I grew up loving lots of sport. I played a lot of rugby league, a lot of basketball, a lot of tennis. So spent a lot of time in a physiotherapy clinic and I really came to love it. So I always thought I wanted to be one. Then I finished school, didn't actually end up doing physio, don't know why, but then long story short, ended up back in physio, loved it. And then after I started working at the running room and I've been there, well, I was there for about 2 years before I ended up moving over here with my partner.
Very nice. Awesome. That's cool. And have you always been a runner? Were you interested in running when you started at the running room, or has that sort of developed through your work there?
No. So as a kid growing up, I always did cross country. So I did have a passion for running, but sports probably were more of my passion at the time. And when I moved to Sydney, I played a bit of rugby, but got a few injuries and kind of fell out of love for a little bit. So really started to get into running and yeah, really started to love it. And then I was running through my physiotherapy degree a fair bit and I ended up getting injured. And at the time I'd heard awesome reviews about the running room. So I went there, I think in like my second week of starting physio. And then straight after that moment, I was like, I want to work here. So made it my mission over the next 2 years to get to know the people there and see if I could get a gig. And pretty much since starting to work there, it's even evolved my passion for running even more. So I love it. I love talking about it. I was worried that I would get sick of it, but I'm definitely not. And I can dribble my ear off about it for way too long.
That's good. I feel like the people who are going to the running room as patients are probably equally as enthusiastic and keen to talk about it. So that's a perfect match. And that's really nice to hear that you found that so early and knew that that's where you wanted to be throughout your study. So that's awesome. Well done for getting it and staying there. And it's awesome. So when we talk about runners, you mentioned there that you had quite a few injuries growing up through different sports and then a running injury as well. What kind of things influence our injuries as runners? Are there particular factors that we should be looking out for, or just general kind of common threads throughout people that you're seeing in clinic that you think might be common amongst runners who are getting these injuries?
Definitely. So pretty much the most common narrative is it comes down to a training error. Predominantly, that's like from what we see in the clinic and also what the evidence mainly tells us. And what I mean by that is people normally doing too much too soon without all the other important stuff that allows them to do that. And that includes things like your strength and conditioning, your recovery, your nutrition, and like your stress and your sleep, all those other things that I've said.
Yeah, I guess it is pretty multifaceted. And yeah, there are so many things that come into play. Are there any kind of really big mistakes that you see runners making? You mentioned the training error. What kind of specific things around that? Are people doing their long runs too big? Are they doing too much kind of weekly volume? Are they progressing that too quickly? Are there any kind of commonalities between that?
So there's a lot, but probably the most consistently for more people getting into the sport is they do too much too quickly, and they normally do it too fast as well. So normally your fitness develops quicker than what your muscles and bones can handle that amount of activity. So people are feeling great. So they're like, oh yes, I want to increase my weekly mileage. I want to go faster. And well and truly before the injury comes, they've done too much, and that can commonly lead to an overuse injury.
Yeah, okay. And how does the speed come into it? You mentioned running too fast. For someone listening right now, they might think, you know, maybe if I run faster, then I'm running for less time. So maybe that's less load because I'm not doing as much total volume. Potentially you could look at it that way. How does running faster versus running slower increase that risk?
Yeah, definitely. So the faster you run, simply, the harder you hit the deck. So more load that goes through your body. It's more like demanding on your whole system in general compared to a longer, slower run. So it's asking more of your body and also asking more of the body as a whole, if that kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, systemic levels of fatigue could be a contributor to that as well too.
Yeah. So in that case, would you advise people to be doing zone two training all the time? Should they be maybe doing one session a week? How do you kind of look at intensity when someone is maybe a bit more vulnerable to injury, or maybe they're coming back from injury? How do you kind of look at intensity? Because I guess if they're training for a speed goal or looking to get a PB, we're going to need some sort of session or speed work or tempo running in there at some point. How do you look at, I guess, adding that back in or programming that?
Yeah, definitely. So a huge part would come down to whereabouts are they in their training block, or what's their goal, or have they just come back from an injury? So the best way to look at it, maybe we think, compare it to say like a sporting team. So pre-season, just before season, in season, and you compare that to starting to train for a marathon and working your way up to a marathon. So generally people say 16 week blocks, you know, can be different depending on the level of experience, stuff like that. When you're first starting and you're trying to increase volume as a whole, you want to prioritize your zone two. Now, it's not as if you're prioritizing it all the time. It's probably your weekly time running would be about 75 to 80% in that zone two. And why that's super important is that's how you build your aerobic base or build the fundamentals that enables you to get faster, closer to the race when you start prioritizing your more faster speed work. So 20% at the start, roughly loosely, would be your high intensity stuff. And then as we start to get closer to the event, that ratio might slightly start to change. And just again, comes down to how they're feeling, their experience, stuff like that. So you might start to add more speed work in 8 weeks out or something like that. And then 4 weeks out, you might add a little bit more to the point where it might even get to 60-40 or 50-50 before you start your taper 2 to 3 weeks out before the race. Now, that's a very broad spectrum and can make it hard to appreciate, but it is complicated and it's always down to the individual.
Yeah, 100%. I think, yeah, it's nice to have some, I guess, overarching guidelines or principles to understand. And I think that makes a lot of sense is, yeah, having the bulk of your training as easy zone two, jogging, conversational pace. And then, yeah, as you're getting more specific leading up to a race, adding that in and, you know, as your injury allows as well. Are there particular injuries that are more vulnerable to the speed work? Are there some injuries that it doesn't affect as much, or is it just like a kind of blanket rule? If you've got any particular running related injury, it should be something that you need to look at.
So yeah, not necessarily. It again depends on the individual, their previous history of injuries, maybe the experience, how much training they're doing. So like, you know, maybe if they're more acute, they're doing more speed work, they might be more vulnerable to a soft tissue injury, where if they've been training a lot for say the last 8 weeks, they might be more susceptible to a bone stress injury. And age is actually really important when it comes to that, because depending on how old you are, it makes you more susceptible to different types of injuries. So If you're younger, it might be more bone related, where if you're older, it's probably more likely to be soft tissue related.
Okay, that's really good to know. And where does strength training fit into all of this? So we're looking at kind of having the bulk of our training is zone two, adding in some speed work when it's relevant, specific, and when you're ready for it. How do you see strength training fit in? Obviously, as a physio, you're providing strength conditioning rehab programs all the time. How do runners kind of fit that in? Where's, I guess, the level of importance to that versus the running stuff? Should everyone be doing strength training? What's kind of your, I guess, overall philosophy around that?
Yeah, so I always like to use this analogy with my clients. I ask them the question, would you ever drive a car without your seatbelt on? And I would hope all of them would say no. So then I answer the question saying, then you should never run without doing strength training. So I see strength training as paramount to a successful runner.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, Harry. What about the people who just don't do strength training and don't seem to get injured? Because there's definitely those people that appear. And obviously, like, you know, my background, I am always encouraging people to get into the gym. But, you know, obviously there's a lot of misconceptions around what strength training might actually look like. And then every now and then there's these people that seem to just have had very few injuries and aren't hitting the gym. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think in that example, genetics are probably huge. So potentially could be experience, maybe a bit of luck, but there is conflicting evidence out there of exactly how much strength training prevents injuries, but it does bias towards that it does more than it doesn't, besides the outliers that might fit out of it, which it could be exactly your example. But my thought processing too is all the secondary benefits strength training has for your body as well too. So, you know, I like to think of a holistic athlete. When we think of that, it doesn't just come down to cardiovascular fitness, and not even just for an athlete, sorry, just a healthy person as well. Strength is paramount for like healthy aging when you get into your later age, like life, years of your life, because once you start hitting 40 or 50, no matter what, you start to decline, your muscles start to decrease in size. And that can actually be a big killer later in life is, you know, falls when you have limited muscle mass. So big tangent, but kind of answer the question in that I still generally very much would argue that it does help prevent injuries. It's the best way that we know currently predominantly to rehab injuries that occur. And it also has amazing secondary health benefits to all individuals.
It's so great. And I just think it's so important, especially on the aging piece, which I know is probably not what runners want to hear, because they're like, I don't care, I just want to do my marathon in 6 weeks. But yeah, it's super important. And for people who are really hesitant, and I know Soph and I spoke about this a lot, but I don't think we could ever speak about it too much because it's so important. What about people who are worried that they're going to get really bulky and really muscular and suddenly look like a power man, and then that's going to slow them down? Like, is that something that's a real and sort of valid fear? How do you help people with that apprehension?
Yeah, definitely. And that is a very common narrative that we hear in the clinic. So it comes down to how you train. So people who do a lot of training, it's just nearly impossible for them to gain too much muscle mass because they're burning so much calories. So a lot of them still are getting stronger, but not necessarily increasing in size or bulk. If outside of that, maybe they're just getting into running and they've got that concern and maybe not burning like crazy amount of calories, what you can do is prioritize like building muscle strength without kind of working in an intensity or range. That's what we call hypertrophic, which is where you're increasing the size and amount of your muscle cells. So there's definitely ways around it. You just got to ask the right people on how to approach it.
Yeah. So for someone listening who wouldn't be sure what the difference is, they probably, you know, might assume that all strength training is muscle building focused. How do you actually separate those two? What does that look like in terms of maybe the rep ranges or the exercise intensities? If you can give a couple of examples.
Definitely. So if you got out a textbook today, most likely like that word I used before, hypertrophic, which is where you're increasing the size and amount of muscle cells in a certain global muscle like your bicep. So a lot of your, you know, big gym goers love to go and push heavy weights and fatigue in around that 8 to 12 rep mark. And by fatigue, I mean, they get to that 8 or to that 10th rep and they've got nothing left in the tank. So they can't lift another rep. Where if you're not training in that intensity, so maybe you're doing like a little bit less and a little bit more reps, you're much less likely to get that physical increase in size of muscle bulk.
Yeah, super interesting. And then I guess on the other side of it too is there's been this, at least from my perspective, in the clinic and social media, this new wave of runners which would almost class themselves as a hybrid athlete, and they're wanting to lift heavy in the gym, and they're wanting to gain muscle size, and then they're also wanting to go out and do marathons, which I think is really cool. Like I like that idea of excelling in two things which might previously seem quite opposite. Do you think that's possible as well at sort of like high ends? And like, do you think that's potentially beneficial? Like, how do people, you know, let's say they want to maintain their bodybuilding gym routine and run, is that going to at some point become bad for either of their sports?
So I, in that example, I think setting goals would be paramount. So what specifically is the most important aspect to them? Is it being very bulky? Is it being very fit? Is it getting the PB in the marathon, or is it having a six pack? So they can all interplay, and you can try and want them all, but as a therapist, you can be realistic and say maybe all of it isn't actually that attainable considering all these other factors. So kind of stratifying potentially what's most important, you can most likely get all the things that you're after.
Cool. So I'm not going to lose my gains that I've worked really hard for when I come back from my return to run.
No, you definitely don't. You don't need to.
And why is the strength training actually important? Like you've said, it's paramount. Everyone should be doing it. It's essential. It might be preventative of injury. How does it actually work? Like, what is it actually doing, maybe physiologically or a little bit more broadly, to have those benefits?
Yeah, so it does a few things. One thing that it's got more clear evidence towards is it actually improves your running economy. So it enables you to run more efficiently for longer, requiring less energy or demands on your body. So that's pretty cool. It also has those effects, obviously, that we were talking about before. And it just makes your body more robust and resilient to high impact stresses that running requires. So particularly for your bones as well too, which is really important.
It makes a lot of sense if people can increase their strength training and then improve their tolerance to injury and be stronger, more durable runners, more robust. I think it's, yeah, really helpful. And are there particular muscle groups or areas of the body, or maybe, I guess, common weaknesses that you see? We love talking about calves. Are you as keen on calf raises as we are?
I do love my calf raises. Your calves actually absorb the most amount of force with every stride when we run. The most iconic one, which a lot of people might have heard of, is called your soleus. And it's kind of underneath the top layer of your calf muscles. And it's actually the biggest one and the most important for endurance runners, because it actually absorbs about 6 to 8 times your body weight with every stride, which is pretty incredible. It's actually amazing. And your quads probably do around 4 and your glutes around 2. So it's definitely working the hardest. Now, one is because of its structure. So it's got a pretty cool structure in that it is what we call a multi-pennant muscle. Now, what that means is think of it as like a leaf, and a leaf has a little stem that goes up the middle, and then it has little branches kind of off to the side, and then you can see the green leaf in between all that. Is that ringing a bell in your head?
I can see it so very clearly.
That's good. Your soleus has a similar structure to that. And what it does is that means that it has a lot more contractile room along the muscle rather than muscles that don't have that. So it just gives it a much better capacity to be able to create and handle forces. So that's really cool. And it's pretty unique in that structure. Like there's other muscles that are similar, but it's pretty unique in that structure. Another reason why it's really good at that is it's primarily made up of type one muscle fibers. So they're your slow twitch or your red muscle fibers, and they're your long distance muscle fibers. So they can receive a lot of blood flow. So they can receive a lot of oxygen, and oxygen is really important for creating energy. So that's how they do that versus your outer calf muscles, your gastrocnemius, which you might've heard of. They're more laced up with your type two muscle fibers, which are your fast twitch, and they're more important for say sprinting or explosive movements like jumping and stuff like that. And probably one of the last things of is its function. So it acts, the soleus acts as a plantar flexor. And what that is muscles that get you up onto your tippy toes or help you skip. Say if you've got a rope and you're skipping. Now that movement is the most important or provides the most amount of force when we propel ourselves forwards during walking or running. So in order to do that, you need a really strong muscle or powerful muscle that can do that. So they're probably the main things to why it's so cool.
Nice. You should be getting commission from the soleus muscle. That was a good sales pitch. How do we train this? If it's different to the gastroc, are we just doing normal calf raises? How do we specifically get that stronger?
Definitely. So depending on who you talk to, they'll give you a different answer. But if you did a normal calf raise, you still actually work the soleus, but you don't isolate it as much as if you do it in a different way. So if you're like, holy crap, I haven't been doing my soleus, don't worry. If you've been doing calf raises, you're still getting it, but you could probably do it a little bit better if you start to put a bit of bend in your knee or flex your knee. So if people have ever heard of a bent knee calf raise, where the knee's bent when you're going up and down, or probably a more common example that people would know is the machine in the gym where you sit in and the bar's across your knee, and then you're doing calf raises like that with a bit of weight.
Yeah, nice. That's awesome. If people aren't already doing those, get onto it ASAP. Cool. I think that might be it for calves. I feel like you've done plenty of detail, which is really interesting. I'm still imagining the leaf. It's a very good visual. When we talk about, I guess, strength training more broadly in a rehab context, and often, people get injured, they'll go see the physio, they'll get prescribed a rehab program, they'll go through that process. And I often hear kind of more from the coach point of view, once people have rehabbed from injuries, they continue doing their bridges or their clamshells or whatever kind of low level rehab they were doing early on. And they just sort of keep doing that forever, I guess, as maybe a preventative measure on their own behalf, thinking that these worked last time, so I'll just keep doing it. How do you suggest runners, I guess, graduate beyond that point? I think often yourself and Lydia at the running room would be doing more of that later stage rehab stuff. But if someone has been prescribed some of those exercises, they've gotten better, the injury feels good, should they just keep doing those things? How do they know when to progress? How do you look at that?
Definitely. So still doing them is remarkably better than doing nothing. So for those people that have still been doing them, good on you. That's still important. But similar to when we run, normally when we run, we kind of want to increase our volume or increase our speed or increase our intensity. We want to be doing the same with our strength work. So we don't always want to be doing the same stimulus because your body will get used to it and then you plateau from there. So you stop getting those extra benefits if you keep making it more challenging. So for those people that are now pain-free, running as much as they like and feeling good, what they might need to work towards is a bit more of a generic strength and conditioning program. Now, Instagram and all the social medias can make this much more complicated than what it needs to be. Pretty much all it needs to be is twice a week, and you just want to be hitting pretty much every major muscle group of your lower limbs, I would say, in a compound movement, either in a split stance or a single leg positions. So to break that down even further, I would just say you want to do some form of squat, which is primarily targeting your quads and your glutes and maybe some of your outer glutes. And examples of how you can do that is your split squats, your Bulgarian split squats, your variations of lunges. The second thing you'd want to be doing is some form of hinge, which is probably working more your hamstrings and your glutes again, and a lot of like your erector spinae and your back and maybe your upper back. And that can be things like your single leg Romania deadlift, B stance deadlift, deadlift, all that kind of jazz, sliders, stuff like that. You want to be doing some form of calf raise, primarily the soleus one, just because, as I just went on about, that's really important. And then you also want to be doing some form of plyometric, which is your more explosive, skipping, jumping type movement. And that's pretty much it. So what's that? Four different exercises twice a week would be a really good place to start.
Nice. Easy.
And Harry, if a runner's never gone to the gym before, would you encourage them to do plyometrics in their first week, or do you reckon they should have a couple of weeks to get used to their training first? Or like, if they've got a race coming up, let's say their race is in 3 weeks, would you get them to start at the gym 3 weeks out from a race? Like, is there any particular situations where you'd modify that program?
Yeah, definitely. So again, it comes down to experience as well. Like, if they've been in the gym for a fairly long time, I'd have no fear of putting plyometrics in there straight away. But if they're, yeah, as you said, quite new to the gym, maybe not too comfortable, I'd really want them to develop the basics first and feel confident with it. Like, there's, I don't know, I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes therapists can make, is forcing something on someone that they don't feel comfortable with. That's going to make them a lot less likely to do it and a lot less likely to do it well. And if it was 3 weeks out for a race, yeah, I wouldn't be doing anything too drastic. Maybe versions of those four exercises, but at a much lower intensity, as we want to be prepping them for like the taper into the race, getting their body nice and fresh, not increasing the amount of stress on it.
It's a tricky thing though, isn't it? Because I think that's something that I often hear runners talk about, is like, oh, well, it's like really close to a race, so like, I'll start strength training later. And then like after that, like, oh, I'm recovering from the race. And then it's like, oh, it's Christmas period. Oh, there's like another race, I'll just wait. And then it becomes this thing where it just gets delayed and delayed and delayed. So I know my perspective, I always encourage people just to like get started and just like start doing something just to build the habit. And then we can work on the intensity at a sort of period outside of that intense training block. But I know a lot of runners do have like partly just delay because it's out of their habit, but a fear of getting injured. Do you ever see that? Do you ever see runners getting injured from their strength training?
No, I don't. Okay. Well, no, I haven't in my experience yet. I'm not saying that it might not happen, but yeah, I just think if you're with the person, you know their experience, you know their confidence level, you're not going to get them to do things that would increase their likelihood of injury. Do what feels comfortable. And yeah, that's a kind of good way of putting it. Forcing them in the habit's not a bad way of going about it. It's just, you just need to find how to make it a part of your routine. Like, you know, commonly I tell people to do their rehab exercises when they brush their teeth, because they always brush their teeth, so it's easy to remember. So you just need good ways of habit formation to get their strength training in. And I'm not a psychologist, so I'm not very good at that, but I'm sure there's different ways. Like, I don't know, things I think about is asking them what they like. If they're not comfortable with the gym, there's other ways you can do strength. Like, do you like doing it at home? And if they're like, yep, cool. And then if they don't like that, you're like, oh, do you like doing it with people? And then you can maybe offer like classes or boot camps or stuff like that. So just really trying to individualize it to the person in the best way possible that will most likely make them do it.
And then what about like, you know, if it's specific types, I think a lot of people wanted that too. Like, is it going to be enough if I just do my strength training at home? Or the other one, is it going to be enough if I go to F45 twice a week? What are your thoughts on the both two very different things?
They're good examples. And, you know, bias is coming to that of my preference. And obviously I'd prefer them to do it in a gym, in a controlled setting, exactly what I tell them to do. But if that's not what their interests are, then I don't force it upon them. If they were at home and they were just starting, I would say it's better than nothing and it's a good place to start. But in a few weeks, we might need to go on to like Facebook Marketplace or Rebel and buy maybe one kettlebell and two dumbbells. And you can get really creative with that. So you don't need much. And conversely, for the F45 example, education, I believe, would be really important there, and trying to clarify around goals. Like if it's running is the priority, then at F45, what they might need to prioritize is more the strength classes rather than the cardio ones. Or, you know, running's just something they like doing on the side, but they just love doing F45. I'd just be like, cool. Well, then increasing your volume heaps running or increasing your intensity might not be the best idea.
Yeah, I think that's really great. I think it's important to not to forget about the fact that going to a group fitness class is also really fun. And even if it's not strictly strength training, for someone myself, like I love going to a group class, I find it so much fun. So I always think having things that are sustainable in your fitness routine is really good. But I think, as you said, being clear about the goals, because if you think you're going there and getting really strong, a really strong soleus, probably not what you'd want.
Definitely, yeah. I've seen a few calf raises in there before, though.
A few what?
They do calf raises in there sometimes, so that's a good thing.
Oh, goodness. Harry, would you be able to tell us about some of the injuries that you had as an early physio or early runner? Because I always think the injuries that I get, I feel like I can treat better, or at least I've got a lot more interest in, and I'm often a bit more well-read on the research and have this little extra enthusiasm for. And I know as well, being a physio, whenever you do get injured, it's always this exciting opportunity to learn more about what you've potentially done wrong, what you could do better. Tell us about what your previous injuries were, and have you sort of had some thoughts around your training errors?
Definitely. So my biggest reoccurring injury before I started there was shin splints or medial tibial stress syndrome. So ever since I was a kid, I was a classic boom and bust cycle. I'd train, I'd get heaps of Ks in, do an event, and then my shins would kill me. I wouldn't run for 6 months, and then I'd come back and do it again. So that's what I went and saw a colleague of ours, Pat, back in the day. And yeah, I just found it unbelievable for even me as a physio student, how much I was doing wrong. And it was so cool to learn about just how easy it can be to do things a lot better. So yes, shin splints is a bit of a passion of mine that I love treating. And I would argue that I can treat it better. Since starting at the running room, when you're around people who are doing crazy stuff all the time, it's actually quite inspiring. So I actually sometimes didn't listen to my own advice and would do dumb things getting in the, you know, inspiration of things. So last year I dealt with ITB pain for a fair bit, and that one's pretty rough. I tore my calf a few times. I got Achilles tendinopathy. At the start of this year, I was dealing with plantar fasciopathy for a fair bit. What else have I had? Runner's knee on and off here and there. A bit of like gluteal tendinopathy after the marathon last year. So I've had a few things in the last few years, but it is really cool because as a therapist, it's cool to be on the other side. So like the stuff I'm telling people to do, I have to do myself, and then it helps you empathize with them. Like, what are they feeling? Like, what should this exercise feel like? What should we do here? And I know it's different for everyone, but I don't know. I feel like the more injuries you have and the more you can share that experience with the people who have them, it does help you be a better clinician. I would definitely say that.
Is that your advice to physio students? Go out and get injured so you get the first-hand experience.
No, don't follow my stupidity.
I reckon it's helpful. Like I think it's good to follow the advice, but I also think often you have to experience it. And so, like, I think learning the hard way can be really good as well. So I'm in full support, Harry. Well done.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you think would contribute? Obviously, we've talked about strength training, we've talked about the easy running, we've talked about how important calf raises are and building up that tolerance and capacity. Any other factors, maybe like some sleep or stress or psychological issues that kind of influence how common these injuries are?
Definitely. So yeah, everyone that comes and sees you thinks that it's purely, you know, something to do with their training from a purely biological, mechanical perspective is what caused their injury. But, you know, there's a lot of accumulating evidence that suggests that it's much more intricate than that, and things outside of that might actually even play a bigger role. Exactly what you touched on. So your stress. So, you know, that's a very broad word, but it could, for an example, be you've had a horrible week at work. Your boss has been on top of you. You've barely been sleeping. You've been working 12 hours a day. You know, what impact is that having on your cortisol levels through your body, or maybe what you're eating or how you're sleeping or how you're interacting with other people? And then what impact is that having on your body when, say, you're then trying to go out and run 30 Ks after that week? You're probably exhausted. And yeah, the science is booming that that's actually plays a massive role in contributing to injuries. And sleep is also huge. And I'm sure people have been hearing this a lot on running podcasts that they hear, but yeah, if people aren't getting consistently more than 7 hours, so it's actually, if they're not getting 7 hours, they're actually 30% more likely to sustain an injury. So that is alarmingly high. And for some people, it seems crazy, and getting 7 hours can be tough. But if you are fitting in that population where you're constantly getting less than 7 hours, it might be worthwhile trying to implement or find out strategies that can help you get a little bit more.
It's a tricky one though, Harry, because let's say someone's in a situation where they have had that big work week and they are feeling overwhelmed, they are feeling stressed. Often running is a stress relief. And I know that at the same time, you know, my physio brain tells me that it's a stressor as well, like it stresses the body. So mentally it might feel like a real relief to go out and do that 30K, but like what do we do about that if you've had that big week and you want to still move your body and get that feeling, that post-runner's high, those endorphins? How do we manage that? Like, do we just not run that week so that we can try and sleep more? Do we turn off our running alarm clock, or do we modify the activity to a shorter run, a slower run? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is incredibly difficult and it's so subjective. So like my opinion of your stress levels could be completely different to Sophie's or your own. So one, it's so hard to measure, and how to plan or react to it is also another challenging one. But I think you kind of touched on it at the end there. What I would recommend is potentially dropping off the intensity, or maybe dropping off the distance a little bit, or even just, and this again sounds very generic, but like trying to listen to your body as much as you can. So say you've got 35 Ks on the training plan, but you're at 25 and you just feel completely stuffed, completely exhausted. Many runners are very stubborn and they will just do anything they can to get that 35 Ks done, even though they're, I don't know, say 6 weeks out from a race, so it means nothing. And then they're completely exponentially increasing their likelihood of probably sustaining an injury. So runners think short-term when they should be thinking long-term.
No, I think that's really good. I think the thinking short-term instead of long-term is a good way to frame it, because I feel like there's this other voice in people's head. And I say it's like the Goggins voice of like, push through, like this is building mental resilience, is making you tough. And like, I've so been guilty of that in the past, like having worked in the fitness industry the last 8 years, like that's all you're surrounded by, about find the stuff that's hard and then like push into it. But exactly what you said, it's like not about that specific moment, it's about zooming out and thinking more globally. Because if you do push into an injury, like cool, you just have time off and then you lose fitness, so you're wasting your own time. And I think that's probably a really nice way to frame it, rather than thinking like you're weak and you're resting. Not that I think anyone should think that, but I imagine that there's lots of people that would feel that when they decide not to do the extra 10Ks when they're hurting.
Definitely. And you know, I think David Goggins is amazing for a lot of things, but in that specific example, yeah, it's not a good message to tell people to like train to the limits that he recommends. So yeah, I think that's a very nice way of putting it too.
Yeah. So we just save that for race day then?
Yeah. So, well, yes, to a point. So yeah, race day, that's probably where you want to set your goal. That's where you want to get your time. You're probably a bit more open to the fact of having some time off after if you are hurting, say, 30 Ks into a marathon. I would say push, but obviously not to the point where you actually think you could be doing serious harm to your body. Obviously, that's not beneficial at all.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Tell us, Harry, what are you currently training for?
I just did More Than a Run yesterday, which some of the listeners might know, but it's more of a community event to help raise awareness for men's mental health. And I did the 30 Ks for that, but that was a bit more social. There was no pace set in time. I was just trying to put some Ks in the legs. Next thing on the calendar is the Hamburg Marathon come April.
Wow, that's exciting. What's the race crap for that?
So from now I might just cruise is probably a very generic word. I'll probably just stick semi of what my mileage is at the moment, maybe around 20 Ks into the new year. And then from the new year, probably start trying to slowly increase up to marathon volume. And that again is very generic. And even for myself, I don't even know what that'll look like just yet. I'll have to plan to see how my body's feeling, what work's going to look like, where I'm at in terms of, I don't know, any injuries or anything like that, and go from there.
What's your goal for the marathon?
My goal. So I've only done one before, and the goal for that one was just to finish. So ideally this time I would like to do it in under 3 hours, 30 minutes.
Oh, nice.
So exciting. Yeah. This is awesome. Is it a hilly course?
Hamburg's pretty flat, so it should be okay.
Be easy.
I doubt that very much, but less hilly than Sydney, so that's beneficial.
You just got to keep that plan of fashion check. Harry, I reckon you're gonna do under 330 so easily. I feel like you can go a lot faster than that.
Thank you, but it's a long way and I've only done one before, so I think we want to keep that. That's a goal. I reckon it'd be a good one for the second one.
Yeah, but you've been doing your pogos, your calf raises, like you're on the right track.
I have been. Staying off the caffeine too.
Oh, off the caffeine.
No, I'm joking.
I'm not on that train.
And Harry, what will be the race day shoe? Do you know yet? And what are you currently running in shoe-wise?
So I like to have a bit of a rotation, as that's what the evidence kind of points to the most, not having a single shoe. So for my longer runs on the weekend, I'm a bit of a sucker for Ons. So I'm in an On Flow, which is about, I don't know, I'd say like a medium kind of support shoe. I think it's got a 7 mil heel drop, which means that's like the height at which it drops from the back of the heel to the toe. Now, and then for my shorter runs, I use a On Flash, which is a bit lighter, a bit less supportive, a bit faster with an even small heel drop. And then for when I'm doing a bit more speed work or on race day, I am a sucker for the On Echo Booms, which is a carbon plated shoe, and they're very fast.
Gosh, you should be sponsored, all those Ons.
I've been reaching out, Roger Federer, but he hasn't replied yet.
Maybe after this podcast. This will be the break you need.
Wow, cool. On, my goodness. I need to get on the Ons. Like, I did try some on a few months ago and actually really liked them. And then I've been so injured, I'm like, I've still somehow accumulated like an extra 4 pairs of shoes whilst I've been so injured. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. I cannot get any more shoes until I'm back running at least like a few weeks of running in. But you know what, Harry, I might take some of your advice once I'm running, maybe a couple of weeks in, maybe my first run. It'll be my present for my first run back.
Love that.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Harry. It's been really interesting hearing your perspective on a few different topics around, I guess, important areas for runners to think about. So I think the listeners will take a lot of those tips away. And if they are looking for a little bit more information, you've got plenty of resources on your relatively new Instagram pages, which is exciting. And if any listeners want to reach out to you, we know that they might be able to access you virtually online. Is that still an option?
That is still an option. So over here in Germany, I'm still working for the Running Room. I'm doing a lot of online consultations with people from all over the globe. So it's been really awesome. I've been working with people from Australia, from England, from States. I had one from Pakistan the other day. So it's a really cool medium to work as a running specific physio. And I was a bit nervous at the start because I didn't know how it worked, but I actually genuinely believe it works really well, to the point where I actually really like, I love it. So yes, you can reach out to me through the Running Room. Just go to online bookings and you can book with me if you want. Alternatively, my info is on there. So if you wanted to ever ask some questions about what that actually involves, you're more than welcome to reach out to me.
Yeah, perfect. We'll have all of that linked below as well, so people can go straight in and have a chat to you and get onto their soleus bent knee calf raises.
Cool.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.